Now all the bonds and the relationships that you solidified up to this point, we're now going to see, did they mean anything? Or was it just all smoke and mirrors?
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 492, for the week of January 1st, 2024. I am literal beachhead, David T. Cole, and I'm here with self-ejecting tomato, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm sensing a train wreck.
And effective placebo, Tara Ariano.
Hey, whatever works. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another year. Yes, it is our first episode of the new year. We are recording this well in advance, so our standard disclaimer applies.
Oh, sorry. Just before I began, I forgot to mention to Sarah, Happy New Year.
That's sweet.
Oh, Happy New Year, guys.
Smooch. We are here with a very special episode. We are considering not one, not two, three listener-submitted no-knack pitches. We're starting the year on a nice positive note. We're talking about the worst episodes of otherwise potentially canon-worthy shows. Shall we get into it, everybody?
I say yes.
All right, let's hear that first one.
What would you do for $1 million, literally? What behavior would you ignore? Would you help a stranger you barely knew? Would you play to win at all costs? On reality television over the years, there have been scandals about racism, sexism, violence, and sexual violence. The Challenge had the infamous Tanya Evan Kenny scandal that started there. We at The Challenge take blah, blah, blah seriously, script from TJ, and title cards showing victims and survivors where to find help. Watching this episode of Survivor made me feel incredibly gross about spending so much time on the show, and I, like many others, questioned whether I would continue watching the series. I present for the Nonak Survivor, Season 39, Episode 8, We Made the Merge. This episode is 2 hours long because what happens in the first hour is so egregious that CBS could not air two episodes a week apart. They knew they would have a firestorm on their hands. Many articles were written about it when it was made, and as many a challenge episode has started, this Survivor episode starts with a disclaimer, and it needed it. One of the big milestones for any Survivor contestant is the merge. You get to be on the jury at the end, you vote for the winner, and are much more likely to be remembered. There's the question of whether old alliances will hold or new ones will form. There's lots of strategy talk. I'm going to start with Kelly, an Asian woman, age 29, and an MBA student. She's taking a walk with Missy, and Missy is from a different tribe and confiding in Kelly.
So what happens here is Missy and Kelly compare notes on constantly getting groped by another player named Dan, who has, because of various shuffles, been on tribes with both of them to this point. So they agree he's a creep that they should vote out, and then Kelly has a talking head interview, and that's clip one.
The fact that it makes me, Lauren, Elizabeth, Missy, like, all Molly, like, it made all of us uncomfortable. Like, this isn't just one person. It's a pattern. Like, it's a pattern, and it's like, yeah, like, it takes five people to be like, man, like, the way that I'm feeling about this is, like, actually real. Like, it's not in my head. Like, I'm not overreacting to it. It's like, no, like, he literally has done these things to five different women in this game. That sucks. That totally, totally sucks.
You know, if there are issues to the point where things need to happen, come to me and I will make sure that stops.
Okay.
Because that's, I don't want anyone feeling uncomfortable. So, like I said,
I think it'll stop because Janet is here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure this is not, like, it's not okay.
Producers' voices are not normally heard on the show. Kelly is visibly upset, but doesn't want to cause waves. She doesn't want to mess up her game. And she's right. This happens all the time in real life. Women are made to feel like their experiences are in their heads. And if they speak out, it will damage their careers. Unfortunately, Tommy becomes suspicious of Kelly because she is talking to Missy for too long. We know that they were bonding over this terrible groping experience with Dan, but Tommy doesn't. Later, Janet talks to a visibly upset Kelly. Then Missy and Elizabeth speak privately, clip two.
How was last night?
Well, he didn't touch me, so that's nice.
That's arms?
As soon as he had his arms on Janet, he was good. So, like, I didn't get touched at all. Yeah. It was great. Kelly opened up to me about how her and Molly felt very uncomfortable. I told her that we felt very, very similar and that we could all band together to get Dan out. So she's talking to Janet about that right now. So when you talk to Janet, she may ask you how you felt about sleeping or even in camp. That's what she's asking about. And you tell her how uncomfortable you are.
Yeah.
Like, you have a very open mom-daughter moment about how uncomfortable you are. Right now, that's our only play.
The merge is about numbers. And so right now, my job is to do whatever it takes to get on the right side of the numbers. The original Vokai are not the biggest fan of Dan. And so if I can play up that card in whatever way possible, I'll do it.
Missy and Elizabeth use Dan's behavior to craft a way to stay in the game a little bit longer. They know that Dan's behavior is inappropriate. They're put off by it, but they're playing for $1 million. A title card comes up reading, "The following morning, the producers met with all players, both as a group and individually. They were cautioned about personal boundaries and reminded that producers are available to them at all times. Based on the outcomes of those discussions, the game continued. In addition, the producers met privately with Dan, at which time he was issued a warning for his behavior. Producers continue to monitor the situation." Having read accounts from players after the game, many of the players had no idea what the discussions were about until after the game was over. There is caution by the production side not to damage the game / their television show. There's an immunity challenge. Something happens. Clip 4.
When Jamal told me that we were going to vote Dan out tonight, I felt a great deal of relief because some of the girls have come to me upset about being in his presence. And Jamal coming to me like that, it just confirmed in my heart that it was the right thing to do. But it's really hard for me because I really, really do like Dan. However, this is the moral decision that I'm making. I just have a personal, emotional need to have these girls feel okay. So I'm going to do what's best for them.
Janet talks to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth says she will vote Dan out. But she thinks it's all a lie. Using the story of "we all feel uncomfortable," Elizabeth plans to solidify her alliance with Dan. "I know what the producers were hoping for the outcome to be. When Zeke, a transgender contestant, was outed by Jeff Varner in Tribal, the whole tribe turned against Varner and they didn't even vote. Everyone just agreed that Varner's behavior was unconscionable and he was told to leave. That does not happen here. Kelly is voted out instead of the groper Dan." Janet is shocked by the Kelly blindside. Lauren explains her terrible reasoning. Her own experience left too much doubt in her head about what Dan was doing. Janet, like a smart, reasonable adult, goes to talk to Dan and brings the accusations to him. Clip 9.
Missy, are you in here?
I am, yes.
Can you come out for a minute? And Liz?
One second.
It's better if left alone, Dan.
No, it's not. Liz, did I not talk to you right up there on the corner and said, you said how uncomfortable you were and thank God I was back? Did you or did
thank
you not
God
do
you're
that?
Back.
Oh, from the, and how uncomfortable you were and thank God I was back.
Yeah, I did say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dan, did you hear that?
But uncomfortable with me?
Yeah.
If that's the case,
She said that. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. Everybody has been in shock.
Are we okay?
We are fine.
Okay.
Dan, we are fine.
Okay. Because that's all that matters.
Yeah, but you did say that. I did.
Elizabeth acknowledges that she knows what other people were saying. She had seen the behavior, but because it wasn't against her, it didn't cross the line. So because she hadn't had a heart-to-heart with Kelly, Elizabeth dismisses Kelly's experiences. She did talk to Janet about how uncomfortable she was with Dan. In the game of Survivor, lying and deception are common. Elizabeth couldn't withdraw herself from the game to see that something real was happening. In her confessional, Elizabeth is blinded by the game and admits to using gameplay to misdirect the vote and get Kelly out. Janet confronts Missy and Elizabeth about the deception, confirming that they did have their own accusations against Dan. They don't know where to draw the line when it comes to trying to win $1 million. "I'm leaving a lot of things out about standard gameplay. There are a lot of stupid things that they tried this season with Sandra and Rob that really don't work. Let's just skip to the next tribal council." Jeff asks the group about what happened after Tribal Council last time. There's a debate whether the Dan vote was gameplay or was what it actually was, an attempt to get the Scroper out of the game. Clip 13.
But Jeff, I just want to make it clear, this was a survivor play that went wrong for Janet.
I disagree. No, that's ridiculous. If you know anything about it,
I know a lot about it. A lot. And what's happening now is that the victim role is being assumed by Janet, and she's now, instead of taking responsibility for being on the wrong side of the numbers, is trying to spin this into something that could potentially affect the life of Dan. If this was truly a general tribal concern, I would have been involved. Tommy would have been involved.
No.
Dean would have been involved.
No. This whole idea of if this was actually an issue, then I would have heard about it. He would have heard about it. That's exactly what happens in the real world, guys. This is exactly what happens in the real world. When a woman brings up a charge and people want to negate whether or not it's legitimate, they say like, well, if it was such a big issue, then she would have brought it up last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We are not entitled to know things just because we're men or just because we're in power.
Jamal speaks from his own experiences and defends Janet. I'm choosing not to clip Dan. Janet feels persecuted for coming forward on behalf of women of the tribe. Kelly is on the jury at the tribal and is forced to sit there and watch and listen without commenting. Jury members aren't allowed to speak. Basically, the producers are letting the abuser continue on the show. They should have stopped this. This is supposed to be entertainment. Strategy-wise, there's a legitimate reason to keep Dan in. A survivor goat is a person who will get no votes. They're usually unliked or crazy. Most contestants want to be sitting next to someone unlikable in the end. It wasn't until episode 12 that Dan was removed from the game. That's 4 episodes later, which is somewhere between 9 and 12 days on the island. The title card said, Dan was removed from the game after a report of another incident off camera and did not involve a player. It wasn't until Dan gropes a PA off camera that he is finally removed from the game. The show Survivor often likes to say it reflects real life and real social dynamics. Jeff Probst will highlight players who struggle and don't give up on challenges. They love a good crying jag to show how far players are willing to push themselves. This episode shows the worst of humanity and how people won't step up to help others against their own self-interest. When you're playing for big money, others' feelings don't matter. Watching this episode, maybe you want to quit the show. They end up having to institute new rules and procedures behind the scenes to prevent this from happening again, and I hope to never see an episode like it. Several cast members did not show up to the reunion at the end of the season because of how they reacted to the Dan situation. And Dan was, of course, banned from the show. So I hope you add this to the no-nack because it's a terrible episode of television.
Thank you, past and future guest Sean. This was a tough one because I understand where he's coming from, that reprehensible stuff happens and it's impossible to ignore that. That's the point of the episode, but that's the point of the episode where I'm sort of torn. I get his point about they were probably hoping for a repeat of the Jeff Varner situation where everyone just by acclamation all agreed, this is gross, we do not support it, and we all just spontaneously sort of agree, we're going to break from the rules and the structure of this show and just decide what is the right moral thing to do. But at the same time, like, Survivor's not really about making the right moral decision. It's about a complex web of what your values are and your, you know, how you think you can get away with stuff and what you think other people are thinking. Like, it's such a complex game. And you see that here. I take his point, like, what Liz does is kind of the worst part, where it's like, you know, she knows that something serious is happening, but she also knows I can use this to my advantage and it's not going to hurt me. And I think because she doesn't necessarily, maybe I'm giving her too much the benefit of the doubt, she doesn't necessarily understand how bad it is for Kelly because she hasn't talked to her. She hasn't seen the interview that we saw where Kelly's talking to the producer in her talking head and like breaks down. And you see how really upset she is about this because, you know, how much you, not to generalize, but like as a woman or, a less advantaged person, where you are on the scale of like, ugh, he's just a guy like this, he's going to do this shit, he's a certain age, he's whatever. Like, I mean, Sarah, you know what I'm talking about. Like, that people's tolerance for that kind of shit, which is like, and even what we see, it's like, it doesn't seem like he even is that conscious that of what he's doing. Like, he's just reflexively like, here's a leg, I'm going to caress it. Like, is it disgusting? Yes, I would be upset about it, but other people don't necessarily feel the same way about it. And so I think that's where Liz is, where like, she doesn't get, O'Kelly is serious. Like, she really is upset about this, and it's ruining her time here. But but I do give the show credit for like showing all of the seams. You know what I mean? Like they, I think they find a way through to craft, like to bring Sean to the feeling he had about this, which is, this is awful and it shouldn't happen. Like, I think the show knows that too. And like, I think it does show where the different contestants, where the different players are in terms of their awareness of what's going on in a way that is like, as documentary as you can get with something like this. And, you know, it's a consequence of what actually went down that, like Sean says, several of the people didn't go to the reunion because they were like, holy shit, I really fucked up. Like, it made me feel differently about myself, I assume, is why they were like, I don't need to go anywhere and continue talking about this. And they, you know, publicly apologized, and so did Dan. So, you know, I'm really torn about this, and I'm very curious to see what you guys think about it, because I sort of feel like this is a warts and all situation that is like kind of fascinating in its awfulness, in a way where it's like you have to experience it, like, to get how bad it is, to get through to the point where it's like, and there are different rules now, and this is why. You know what I mean? So, Sarah, what did you think?
Yeah, I think you're sort of, there's two different axes here. There's the no-knack axis, which is this much worse than the show usually is, or is this bad television when the show's usually good, like riveting television? And should everyone involved in the production, except Kelly and possibly Janet, be thrown in the fucking garbage?
Yes.
I think the second thing is pretty clear. Like, we only heard part of this tribal council, at which the men literally do all the fucking talking about a harassment and borderline assault situation of a woman. Like, that Aaron's like, oh, I'd know about it. And then Jamal steps in, which, like, Jamal is on the side of right, but it's also like, Jamal has a twig and berries, and, you know, why aren't any of the women talking?
Yeah.
And how much patriarchal bullshit has been absorbed by other players in the game, specifically Elizabeth, where she's like, it's the downside of standing up for another player in the game is not as great as the upside of keeping shithead Dan around.
Right.
And like, I remember watching this at the time and just feeling like, if the show had all this footage of Dan being inappropriate that it could cut together, why then is that married with the producer, obviously, think, you know, covering their ass with, well, you know, if it's really a problem, you need to tell someone. Like, if you had this footage that you could cut together, presumably there was more footage besides that.
For sure, yeah.
You shouldn't have to wait for someone who's being victimized to come and be like, I would like this person removed from the game.
Yeah.
Like, don't wait for somebody to tattle. Mm-hmm. You have the evidence.
Yeah.
She doesn't want him touching her. He keeps touching her.
Yeah.
It's not okay. Bodily autonomy. Hello. And then at Tribal, Probst is all proud of himself for like, well, you know, we've handled this situation and I'm going to, so like, this is a really important issue. Hashtag me too. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God. You're such a fucking challenge monster jerk off. Like, the show had responsibilities and didn't meet any of them, basically, except in terms of like legal liability reduction.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And then everybody who probably should have been like, gameplay aside, we need to get rid of this guy, whether that's by voting him out or like, yeah, was Kelly probably a significant player that they wanted to get out ASAP? Sure. Can it wait a week until you go to production and tell them Dan is being a felony? Also, sure.
Yeah.
Like, but here's the thing. It's fucking riveting TV. Like, the way that they're just fucking it up at this network run by known cretin Moonves, I think he was out by that time. I don't remember the timeline. Mm-hmm. I don't envy Probst's position.
Yeah.
I never do. But it's like, this was like watching everybody involved grapple with it and fuck it up and blunder around, like trying to figure out what the thing to do is. And I just kept wishing that we could spend like 20 minutes in that little pod with Boston, Rob, and Sandra and see what they were saying, because I don't know, like I feel like they usually get to the heart of this stuff pretty quickly, whether you like what they're saying or not. Mm-hmm. I get what Sean is saying, but this was offensive enough to me morally and ethically that I do not care to watch the show anymore. And then there's, this is an unentertaining and atypically bad hour and a half of TV, which like, this was bad in ways that you actually, like they're not unexpected from this network and this show. Mm-hmm. And I had seen this TV before and I was still like, oh, like I was shocked, stunned, and saddened all over again. So I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Basically. Like, too. This is such a, I mean, like, thank you for bringing us this thought experiment. Mm-hmm. And I feel like no matter what I do with it, I'm also ethically compromised from having even looked at it again.
Yeah.
But this is really a poser. And, you know, not separating art from artist, but you know what I mean. Like,
yes.
There's certain reality shows that you're like, I can't unknow this about you buttholes. And mm-hmm. That's where we are now.
Yeah.
Dave, mansplain this shit to us, please.
No problem. Got it.
Thanks.
I mean, first of all, I just want to say, reading between the lines, I think Sean's still watching Survivor.
It sounds like it, yeah.
So, I mean, that's part of it. Like, it wasn't bad enough for him to stop watching Survivor.
Right.
Okay, so what happened is terrible, but the problem for me is that Kelly brings this up and it gets to production, and then production has this all hands on deck meeting where, according to the interviews after, they were just talking around names and situations and events, where it just became this like generic, to me, just sounded like it became an after school special of a discussion.
Yeah.
Where mm-hmm. let's all respect each other's boundaries mm-hmm. without examples, without it. I assume because they didn't want to, in the interest of salvaging the game, put their thumb on the scale and say, Dan, can you stop acting like a creep? Mm-hmm. It's skeeving out one or more of the contestants here.
Right. Yeah. They said that to him privately, but not in front of the group.
But not to everybody else.
Correct.
So everybody else didn't really have a true understanding of what was going on.
Right.
The viewer does, because that is the narrative created by the show after. Mm-hmm. So, like, what is the no-knackness of this? Is it that Survivor producers are shitty people mm-hmm. because they let the situation continue when it should have been stopped then?
Right.
Like, they sort of said, mm-hmm. oh, okay, the people that do the dailies or wherever the fuck production works, can you pull this stuff? Can we actually see it and see if this is an actual problem or is what the reality is? Mm-hmm. And they don't, right? They could have done that then and said, oh, okay, boom, like, this has to stop. They don't.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we can still have our cake and eat it too, right? We can say, like, we tried to do something. We talked to everybody, let everybody know what was going on, and the game continued. That's all, like, what that card says.
Yeah.
But they didn't really.
Yeah.
It's the office equivalent of hearing somebody was in this situation and they put out a memo, rather than actually enacting policy or firing somebody or censoring somebody or something like that.
Right.
Right.
So the production company is bad mm-hmm. at this. Mm-hmm. But they pulled the episode out of the fire, right? As an episode of TV, like, it was compelling to watch all that. And I don't mean it was fun to watch it, but like, sad novel or a shitty story or weepy or whatever.
Well, also from, like, a process,
you don't feel
standpoint.
Good having consumed it. Mm-hmm. Me just explaining my what the fuck reaction to why isn't more being done mm-hmm. is a product of the episode they chose to put out. And like, you know, it's a bit of the, you know, like, history is written by the victors, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's got a little bit of that to it.
Yeah.
But if you can separate the circumstance from the product, the show, this kind of shit is what, like, keeps Survivor beyond just being an obstacle course show.
Yeah.
And it's shitty that it happened and it should have happened. But I think what they did with it, like, wasn't bad television, right?
Yes.
So the Nonak goes to the production company for being shitty.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
They get, they're like, they're at fault here. Mm-hmm. Dan was bad. He's at fault, but it could have been stopped right there. Mm-hmm. So I think Sean's making the case that that should have stopped right there. And that's why it's Nonak worthy, because the production company didn't do their job. Mm-hmm. The episode is a piece of television. Mm-hmm. People are talking about it. It changed things. So like, I understand where you come from, Dara. Like, it's shitty circumstances, compelling television.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then it's like a Moebius of like their success at producing this television means that they're kind of even worse.
Yeah.
More compromised morally. Yeah. But
because we're saying they got away with it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're saying like there's this thing they should have been faster to act on. They should have stopped it sooner. The production company zeroed to put it on a TV show, and they were going to do that before they were going to tell Dan to fuck off. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
And this is the episode that came out of that circumstance. So it's like tainted material, right? Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
I don't think the episode as a piece of Survivor is like a bad produced episode of television.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think it's shitty.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a Nonak, which is different.
Yes, right, yes.
Should it just have been excised? What's the alternative? Fast forward 3 episodes or whatever it is until he's kicked out, and then mm-hmm. that's the next episode, and Poochie died on his way to the home planet, kind of like Chiron or something like that.
Yeah,
like, there's no real answer there besides scrapping the season or something like that. Mm-hmm. I guess it all depends on whether you feel like a vote against a Nonak is excusing what happened, which I don't. So,
yeah.
So I would say, like, this as a piece of television is not a Nonak for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'll put it this way, because this is going to come up, I mean, spoiler later in this, of like, I feel like the episode leaves us in no doubt as to how they want us to feel about the circumstances and how the production feels about the circumstances, mm-hmm. where it's like,
and how they want us to feel about the production too,
right.
Which may have been less successful, but still isn't really what we're talking about when we're talking about the Nonak.
Yes. I mean, I don't think that this is an approving vision of what happened. I think it's supposed to be bracing, and like everything in Survivor, this is something that future players are going to have to take into account when they're crafting what their game is going to be. And it also mm-hmm. changed, like, what the, you know, as a word, duty of care is that they have to contestants, where it's like, someone was like, why should this person have more protection than a contestant just because she works for our company versus is a player in the game? And that changed things too. I mean, you know, I don't think Kelly would be like, it was worth it to me to get felt up by this creep, other than just deciding this is an immoral project and we're not going to do it anymore. Like, this is the best that they could do if it was going to continue to be a show. I respect that, and I respect that changes happened because of it. So yeah, it's not a Nonak for me either. Sarah?
I would like to say to Sean, whatever you decided about still watching it, no judgments.
Absolutely.
I continued watching the challenge. God knows I've watched Survivor on and off, but this, as a piece of entertainment, which unfortunately this big issue became, it was successful. All the people behind the camera as human beings are maybe not so successful, but right. We don't get to vote on that shit. If putting this in the Nonak would mean that a boxing glove on a spring punched Moonvase and everybody else involved in this in the nuts, and especially fucking Aaron, shut up guy.
Yeah.
Then I do it. But it doesn't, and this isn't quite a Nonak. Excellent thought-provoking presentation.
Absolutely.
So we love it. Submit a bunch of other posers for us. We're into it.
Totally.
All right, so let's make this official. Survivor Season 39, Episode 8. We made it to the merge. Tara Ariano, what say you? Nonak worthy or not?
Appalling, but not a Nonak.
Sarah?
Ditto. Not a Nonak for me.
Me too. All right, it's time for Nonak number 2.
Monty Python's Flying Circus is a weird beast. The range of sketches is so vast and broad that it's hard to know what to expect from one segment to the next, and that's part of the fun, since the writers/performers usually knew when to end a sketch before it overstayed its welcome. They'd often even comment on it, saying the equivalent of, well, we don't know where to go with this, so let's move on, shall we? They didn't say that this time. Cycling Tour is the first episode of Flying Circus that tells a long-form story rather than a series of sketches. Even the opening credits are absent. Instead, we get the title of the episode and the bouncy strains of the waltz from Act Two of Faust by Charles Gounod. I looked it up. I smiled three times during this ep, and this was smile one. I have a soft spot for Michael Palin, and seeing him ride a bike with a doofy look on his face was kind of fun, the first time. The episode starts thusly, clip one.
August 18th, fell off near Bovey Tracy. The pump caught in my trouser leg.
Did you like that joke-like object? You're gonna hear it a few more times. For listeners who haven't seen this one, don't. The overall premise of this episode is that Mr. Pither, played by Michael Palin, is on a cycling tour of North Cornwall. He falls off his bike a lot and remains uninjured, but a lot of the food he brings with him suffers mishaps. Everyone hates Mr. Pither, or at least is bored as hell by him, which is only right and proper, as the character is instantly, tooth-grindingly irritating. For the first half of the episode, things happen over and over. Pither cycles along to Faust, he falls off, he annoys people around him, and then sets off again. Smile 2, for those paying attention, happens when Pither is looking for a particular part for his bicycle and just happens to be outside of a store where they're sold. I say smile instead of laugh, because jokes aren't really attempted. It's just Michael Palin and Terry Jones, who wrote the episode, having Pither do the wrong thing and hoping that comedy results. For example, Pither goes to a doctor for directions, and the doc writes him a prescription to get said directions from a pharmacist. Sure, he goes to a pub where an older man and a younger woman are on the verge of breaking up. And then they do break up because of Pither, and then the woman storms out, and then the man gets mad and throws Pither bodily from the pub, and then we get what appears to be some kind of punchline. Clip 2.
Just had a chat with your dad!
Pither finds a kindred spirit in Mr. Gulliver. After a car accident, Gulliver starts changing personalities. First, he thinks he's Irish pop singer Clodagh Rogers, and then he thinks he's Trotsky, so he and Pither head toward Moscow on Pither's bike, eventually stopping at the British Embassy in Smolensk. And now I invite everybody to get a beer. You're gonna need it if you choose to watch the next 4 minutes of the episode. Don't. Trust me. Sometimes, it's easy to forget that Flying Circus premiered over 50 years ago. A lot of the time, especially in the first two series, the comedy holds up as fresh and funny as it must have been back then. But occasionally, more often than you'd probably think, a sketch will screech to a halt with blatant misogyny, homophobia, or racism. Blackface is prevalent. The N-word is used in a character's name at one point. The upcoming scene of the episode, which I urge you to fast-forward through, is one of the most racist things I have seen on a television series that debuted in color. Being 51 years old is no excuse, and I'm not clipping from it. But the two racists didn't watch is that the British Embassy is staffed entirely by white men in yellow face who really like bingo. Graham Chapman is the ambassador, I think, I'm not looking it up. He does the accent and squints his eyes, and this goes on for almost 4 entire minutes. There are whole sketches shorter than that. It's pretty shocking, and I hope they're all really embarrassed about it now. Okay, let's move on. Pither and Gulliver as Trotsky get to Moscow, where we get Smile 3, which is the closest thing we get to a joke, I think, in this episode.
Moscow?
Come with us, please.
Oh, who are you?
Well, we're not secret police, anyway. That's for sure. If anything, we are ordinary Soviet citizens with no particular interest in politics. Let us go. Come with us.
Oh, why are you taking me?
What should we tell him?
Don't tell him any secrets.
Agreed.
Tell him anything except we're taking him to Moscow, where Trotsky is reunited with the Central Committee.
We're taking you to a clam bake.
At a rally in Moscow, Gulliver goes from Trotsky to Eartha Kitt, Pither gets arrested and sent to the firing squad, which fails twice, and then he and Gulliver, who is now dressed as Eartha Kitt but is his old self because he got hit in the head with a tomato, are charged with bayonets for some reason, and then the episode ends like this. Clip 4.
Tons! Phew! What an amazing escape! Well, goodbye, Reginald.
Goodbye, Mr. Pither, and good luck with the tour.
I mean, good for them, they finally figured out the sketch wasn't working. So in case it's not abundantly already clear, the no-neck of it all. First, the format. Sketch comedy is best when it is, as the name dictates, a series of sketches. I mean, I guess I can see the Python boys wanting to try something different, but why in the world did it have to be this? Second, racism. Third, I will admit that there are several episodes in the final series that do not, for me anyway, contain a single laugh. However, by that time, John Cleese had left the series, and while he's turned into a real chud, he was vital to the comedy of the series at the time. Now he can sit and spin for all I care, but I needed an ep with all six of the Pythons for the no-knack. And fourth, it's just not funny. At all. No part of it elicits a laugh. Everyone but Palin looks bored. From a show that often hits in such unexpectedly ticklish ways, this one is more like someone going at your funny bone with a dental drill. To quote Faust by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, this episode fucking sucks.
Wow. Thank you, Erica, for that blistering submission. She's right down the line. It's so slow and plodding and repetitive. Even if you could overlook all of the offensive stuff, and of course you cannot, but even if you did, it would still be bad. Like, it's boring and dumb. And by the time you get to, like, well, we're in a tough situation, scene missing, and then the conclusion, it's like, like, you don't have to lampshade that things transition from here to there. It's a sketch show. We understand what this is. And everyone is being very game. I'm sad to learn that this was written by Michael Palin and Terry Jones, who are my two favorite members of Monty Python, because it's awful in every way an episode of this show could be awful. Like, it's just ill-conceived, misbegotten, poorly realized, and on top of all of those things, offensive as well. So, yeah, this was a perfect pitch. I can't disagree with any little bit of what you said. Sarah?
Yeah, I can't either. The fact that the racist bit is as slow and unwilling to quit on itself as the rest of this episode, which, like, Erica's exactly right. Like, he's riding around on a bike and he falls off it and things happen to his fucked up food. Who cares? I mean, the only sort of, not drawback, but the only sort of hesitation that I had going into this is that I'm that enemy of joy who doesn't think Monty Python is very funny.
Sure.
Anyway, like, this definitely isn't, but it's like, okay, if I happen to watch a sketch and it's like, all right, I see where people are going with it, at least. It's just not for me, mostly. I think I started watching it, like, too late. It's like the Catcher in the Rye principle. Like, if you're not the right age, you're just going to miss the window. That was me. And whatever, like, whatever your relationship is with the rest of the series, you are right. Okay? So when I went into this episode, I was like, I don't know, like, maybe I'm not the best judge of this. And then you get to the embassy and I was like, oh, this shit is getting no-knacked.
Yes.
Flat.
Got it.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I enjoyed about this is Palin cheerfully, his character cheerfully wearing those yellow socks and, like, what looked like ladies' T-bar, like Birkenstocks, basically, that I was like, that looks super comfy. Mm-hmm. I am getting a pair of yellow socks and a pair of duck feet shoes. Why not? I deserve it. This was terrible. Mm-hmm. I trust that this is sufficiently worse than usual Monty Python, that I'm okay to vote for it for the no-knack, because, oh my God, brutalizing, felt like an hour and a half. Yeah. Dave.
All right, well, while I talk, Sarah, I just put a link in the show notes. It is my favorite Monty Python sketch. It is 30 seconds long. It is called Julius Caesar on an Aldous Lamp. It's exactly what you think it is. Mm-hmm. If you don't like that, you're never going to like Monty Python, even now. This episode is a really bad episode. I think one thing nobody's really said, like, in so many words, is also incredibly off model.
Yeah, yes. Well, Erica did.
Yeah, Erica did, yes. Yeah. But that's another no-knack magnet, is if it's off model and then poorly done.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the equivalent of a gimmick episode. You know, it's the claymation Monty Python episode.
Yeah.
It's the musical or whatever, even though those two things would be right at home on Monty Python. But somehow this one story told over half an hour seems very out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah just said that was fine. So I think
it was.
Yeah.
I smiled. Like, Monty Python is just not for me.
Sure.
Go with God.
Yeah. You're right. I grew up on it. Like, that was like my first, like, oh, this comedy clicks with me.
Same.
Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
After Kids in the Hall. Yeah. for me.
I found Monty Python's The Final Ripoff compilation cassette somewhere. I didn't really know what it was, but I took it home. I listened to it. I thought it was the funniest fucking thing in the universe. And then I kind of went back there.
I like a couple of the movies.
Just, sure, sure.
You know.
Yeah, but yeah. I get it. You're right. It's the Catcher in the Rye thing. This episode is, she's right. It's just this one thing on repeat for half of it. Mm. Man falls down, man bruises food. I will say the little bit with who would become Trotsky the cabbie, where he's describing his company and how they're working towards having anti or torque protected food so that when food flies out of a accident scene, it doesn't become bad food, mm-hmm. was stupid enough. The self-ejecting tomato that flies out of the sandwich at some point. I did laugh at that. So I will say I got one good laugh out of me. The inept firing squad was like a smile for me. And that was it. And then, of course, there is that the longest 4 minutes in Monty Python history at the embassy where she didn't mention it, but I'm pretty sure that John Cleese is wearing fake buck teeth or he's doing a really good job.
Yep.
Sticking his teeth out there. And that scene just went on forever. And there's a joke that repeats in that scene 3 times as well. So it's racist and comically offensive to boot. Mm-hmm. Really bad. And it is offensive as a piece of bad TV and offensive in itself.
Yeah.
So it is both those no-nag things, whereas Survivor seemed to only check one of those boxes for us. So bad episode of Monty Python, bad episode of television, not funny, and racism to boot. And being 51 year old is no excuse. I should know I'm 51. Let's put this to the official vote. Tara Ariano, no-nag worthy?
Oh, yes.
Sarah D. Bunting, no-nag worthy?
I'm not going to say bingo, but yes, it is.
Mm. All right, that means Monty Python's Flying Circus, Series 3, Episode 8, The Cycling Tour. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot, great no-knock. All right, bing, bang, bing, bong, and we're done. Okay.
Hi, extra hot, great friends. It's Francoise. Last summer, I was heavily pregnant and quarantining during the pandemic, and I chose this as the time to watch every episode of House. Why? Because I make bad decisions, but also because during that wild time of uncertainty, there was something incredibly comforting about a medical drama you could set your watch to and where everyone always gets cured at the end. Plus, the acting is really good, and sometimes the show grapples with genuinely interesting moral and ethical questions. But one episode, this one episode, has been living rent-free in my head for almost a year because it was so bad and so offensive. I hate it, and I hope you will hate it too, so I can stop suffering alone. First, a trigger warning. I will be discussing incest, gay panic, transphobia, and the willful misgendering of characters. If that isn't your jam, and I don't blame you, skip ahead. We'll see you at Winners and Losers of the Week. House Season 2, Episode 13, Skin Deep. After punching another model on the runway and then passing out, a 15-year-old model, and I must stress that she is 15, is brought to House's team for a diagnosis. House does a rare in-person examination. She's just so hot, you see.
Since when do you voluntarily go see patients?
You've seen her?
She's 15.
Yeah, there's something about her. Something in her eyes, kind of maturity.
Yeah, she's an old soul. This is creepy, even for you.
She's a fashion model on the cover of magazines. Hold her up as the sexual ideal, but the law says we can't touch her for 3 more years. How hypocritical is that?
Okay, so we're off to a gross start, but it gets worse. So after the team's usual bad doctoring and patient endangering, House stumbles onto the idea that she has been sexually abused by her dad. And he gets confirmation, and it's gross. Clip 2.
So, what did you do to her?
Why would you possibly think to imagine anyone not wanting to nail her?
It's a compliment. Heart-shaped ass, those perfect, perky, all-natural breasts.
That is my daughter you're talking about.
No, that's your daughter you were talking about. She just instinctively knows how to walk. Designers just love that heart-shaped ass, those perfect, perky breasts.
I'm her manager. I have to promote her.
Oh, that makes sense. You compartmentalize. When you're dealing with the press, you're her manager. When you're helping with homework, you're her dad. When you're making sweet, sweet love, you're her manager.
All right.
Do you love her?
I have never touched her.
Do you love her?
What are you doing? You're trying to trap me into saying
Do you love her enough to admit that you slept with her? Psychological conditions can manifest themselves in physical problems. Sometimes these can be extreme enough to kill. There are treatments, but only if there's a diagnosis. Are you going to admit that you slept with your daughter? Are you just going to let her die? One time.
And somehow it gets worse because you see she seduced him. This 15-year-old claims responsibility for her own incest. Clip 3.
You think things are fine. They're not.
He's my dad.
He's abusing you.
He's not a bad person. I seduced him.
You're the child. He's the adult. He has the responsibility.
I got him drunk. I had to get him drunk. I wanted to have sex with him.
You're sexually attracted to your father?
No. But by sleeping with him, now he lets me do whatever I want. I also slept with my photographer, my financial manager, and my tutor. If I hadn't, I'd be getting C's and posing for newspaper ads back in Detroit.
No, not Detroit. But seriously, this is such a harmful stereotype of the Lolita, of the young girl seductress. She is actually in charge, and these grown-ass men are helpless to sleep with her. This is not as edgy as the show thinks it is. It's disgusting, it's victim-blaming, and somehow it gets worse. Play clip 4.
We found a tumor.
She has cancer?
Technically, no.
So it's not cancer?
No, it's cancer. But he has cancer. On his left testicle.
This is not how gender works, you smug asshole. He goes on to grossly misgender her and explain how she's actually biologically a man, and so that's obviously all that matters. I mean, just listen to the insane gender politics of clip 5.
This is obviously a joke. This is impossible.
No, a joke would be me calling you a homo. See the difference? I'll schedule him for surgery.
No, you're wrong. I'm a girl. Look at me. How could you say I'm not a girl? See, they're all looking at me. I'm beautiful.
That anger, it's just the cancer talking. Put your clothes back on. I'm going to cut your balls off. And you'll be fine.
And then her dad who had sex with his 15-year-old daughter, finally seems to be ashamed of what he did, which has a real gay panic vibe to it. Like, that is not the problem, Tom Verica. Listen, House for sure went off the rails towards the end of its run. But this is season 2. This is when the show was still pretty great. And here it's so obsessed with its own edginess that it's not even interesting. It's just a buffet of harmful, disgusting stereotypes about abuse, pedophilia, and gender. And it needs to have the warning label of the Nonax slapped on this episode so that no one is subjected to it ever again. Sorry to do this to you, but thank you for your votes.
Francoise, holy shit. I was not prepared for this. I'm going to throw this to Sarah because I think she watched this show more when it was on. Sarah, please start us off.
I did watch this show when it was on, and I had blocked this out. Although when it came up, I was like trying to remember which one it was. And then I was like, oh, right. Like, I have a feeling that this is going to be a intersex / androgen insensitivity storyline. And since it's being submitted for the Nonak, I'm not super optimistic, and I was right. But I had no idea the like valley of despond through which we would be traveling just to get there, like all the other shit that Francoise mentioned. In addition, like this is, if I recall correctly, season two was quite good, and it usually was able to balance House's obstreperousness and like combativeness, that it was in the service of something and proceeded from his failure to practice good pain management hygiene and so on and so forth. Like, that character beat of the logline doesn't really play anymore, that it's like, ha ha, he's addicted to Vicodin, what could go wrong? It's a, you know, that's a personality. Like, well, all right, I don't think the show would get made today for a bunch of reasons, but that usually played at this point in the series better than it does here. And then even when House is being a cock, it's because he's trying to get things done for the patient, get to a diagnosis. Here, he's just being a shitty transphobe. Nobody involved in the situation seems willing. Like, you know, see previous discussion about Survivor, like, these are mandatory reporters, and they just don't seem willing to do that, even though they're like, you know, you're talking about a 15-year-old. Like, all right, well, once you find out that she is being abused, someone has to report that. Someone finally does, and then the show kind of makes it out like she's a like stick in the mud, because it's going to be difficult to, it's going to be difficult to get a diagnosis now. Like, oh my God, is anybody even still watching this? And is anybody going to care that he doesn't, that he's not going to be able to solve the mystery?
Right.
Anyway, like, I think this is uncharacteristically, certainly uncharacteristically offensive. And on top of everything that she mentioned, there's a number of like boring side plots and B and C plots, and Cuddy giving him a giving House a placebo, and that's supposed to parallel the plot and all of this stuff. And it's just very clumsy in everything it does. Not like, even when it's not way over the line of offensive and bigoted, it's just boring and misapprehends what this character can and can't do. And yeah, I mean, this was an excellent presentation. I'm sorry that you've lived with this for so long, and hopefully we can put it in the no-nack and none of us ever think about it again. But yes, as the regular House watcher, this was particularly painful. And like, even when it went off the rails, it didn't go off the rails in this out of character, mean-spirited, just scabrous, ugly way. I felt pretty gross after watching this episode, but this is the life we have chosen.
Yeah, this was, as people will probably have put together, this was the one I was referring to when we were talking about Survivor earlier, where it's like, it's clear how Survivor, how the producers feel about what happened and how we're supposed to feel about it. And here it is less clear to me.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Yeah. Like, you know, the whole thing with House, as Sarah said, is like, he's the irascible jerk. It's so funny how mean he is to all his patients. Ha ha ha. Because he's unhappy and he's got his own problems. Like, everybody's got problems. Like, this is, you know, this was the, you know, the golden age of difficult men on TV and anti-heroes and all this stuff, which, like, you know, not to say you can't make art out of people who are not morally or otherwise perfect. But this, like, watching it, it's like, this really was a moment. It's so tiresome now, like, to think this was so many shows where this was the story, where it's like, here's a guy and he's a jerk, but it's, you will be interested because of why he's a jerk. Like, yes and no. Like, you know, this takes you only so far. Anyway, in the case of this particular episode, which, like, I'm not even sure Francoise named all the trigger warnings that are required, not for her presentation, but for the episode itself, because it's offensive on so many grounds. And like, yes, there's also the boring side plots of, like, you know, House's B patient who gives him the idea of what to look for in Alex, the model, is guy whose wife is pregnant. He's having sympathetic pregnancy. And at a certain point he comes in and he has, like, his breasts look, you know, typically female. Har har, you've got yourself the perfect man, a woman. Ha ha ha. It's like, what year are we in? Like, what are we truly, what are we doing? And that's all before we get to just hearing that is just offensive on every ground. Like, leaving aside that, it's just mean. God. Like, it's so mean how he's how he's talking to Alex. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think the show wants us to feel that she deserves this for having manipulated the adults.
Mm-hmm.
She's 15.
Yeah.
It is really just this Gordian knot of no.
Mm-hmm. So painful to watch. Like, every scene is worse, starting with, like, you know, I'm the only reason I'm even going to go talk to her and take my, you know, her history to begin with is because she's so fucking hot. It's like, she's 15. Like, that's our starting point. And then everything from there gets worse until he's like, essentially, you know, casually ruining her life by telling mm-hmm. her this fact about herself she never knew, you know, biological fact. And having no bedside manner, which I know is the point of the show, but it's like, she's 15. Like, she's not equipped to take this on. Her dad is obviously not going to be any help. Like, every part of this is so horrible and awful, like, including the social worker coming and being like, well, they both deny it, so shrug. Like, it's just, it was awful. I really felt gross at the end. So, Dave.
I think this episode is the writer telling on themselves.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think mm-hmm. that is obviously the source of the problem here.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about who wrote it, but no. I believe their wardrobe is 80% Johnny Cash giving the finger to the camera shirts. And that's what they wear every day. They think they're hot shit.
Yeah.
That is the kind of attitude I get towards this. And it's stem to stern yicky. Mm-hmm. This is just yicky.
Yeah.
I also don't watch House, didn't watch House. At this point, I just want to interject my thing I always say about House, which is that is not a good American accent.
No,
no American talks like that. What you're responding to is he doesn't sound British.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Mm-hmm. Anyways, back to the terribleness of this. I also think this episode does House a disservice. Like, the character of House comes across as so incredibly shitty, but even if you, like, you discount all the men of TV of this era you guys were talking about, like, mm-hmm. oh, it's Dennis Leary in Rescue Me.
Yeah.
What's that fucker mad about this week? That kind mm-hmm. of thing. Mm-hmm. If you take that out, this is just him being a shit.
Yeah.
And not in a way that you can, it's a fun mad. It's not. It's just mm-hmm. him being shitty and gross. And on top of that, like, all this talk about underage women and, like, him wanting at it. Mm-hmm. Like, yuck. Just yuck. Yeah. And like,
gratuitous.
Somebody who is the caretaker of this franchise should have stepped in and say, no, thank you. If not for the misgendering and all that kind of stuff, which who knows what people in the writer room were thinking at this moment in her history, mm-hmm. as far as, like, how appropriate that was.
Yeah.
Just like the, I'm not giving it a pass. I'm just saying that's maybe how it got on paper.
Yeah.
And then somebody not saying, you know, House comes off poorly, stem to stern this episode. Like, I know we don't want House to be happy and fun all the time, but this might be going too far as mm-hmm. far as, like, what we're asking the audience to swallow.
Right.
Well, and I just don't think a medical doctor would respond that way is A, but B, like, okay. You do have the detectives on SVU using some terms, which I won't repeat.
Yeah. Sure.
But that even that, like, given what they do, is pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But did nobody think through, like this person has a sort of equally dim view of everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. But not to the point of being gratuitously cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think most medical doctors, or at least not one whose diagnostic judgment we are all supposed to revere, characters and viewers, would have this response.
Yeah.
Neither being gross towards a 15-year-old girl or misgendering that girl. It just doesn't, like, on top of being disgusting, it's not credible. And then you have to take a shower while being like, I don't buy it. So, yeah.
There needs to be a character that can just live in the writer's room. Every time House does something to somebody, you have to imagine this character popping out of the side off camera, pointing at the person he's talking to and saying, he gotcha. And when he says he gotcha, if that sounds super duper gross and not appropriate, then you should probably take it out. And that's what happened here. A lot of the stuff should have been, aha, zing, zang, zoodle. Mm-hmm. You've been got. Like, why? Yeah. Because, like, he's saying I'm a man, not a woman. Like, no. Okay. Strike that. Mm-hmm. Well, what's that mean for the episode? Strike, 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 strike.
Right.
All we have is a guy with a sympathetic pregnancy, and that's just more fuel for the fire. They're trying to tell them the A story. Strike, 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 and there's no episode left, and that's where this should have died on the cue card. That was, like, somebody's
German. Oh, my
German
God, idea. Yes. Burn it.
Yeah.
All right, let's put this one to the official vote. The entire Ariano, Nonak worthy?
Okay, well, I appreciate Francois saying we need to put this in the Nonak just to warn people against ever watching it in their house rewatches. And I'm not sure that's enough. Like, our Nonak does not have carry the weight of like future proofing nuclear waste for 10,000 years in the future.
Oh,
like,
we got to put up one of those that signs that people that don't speak English or
something. House just, like, that sign.
Spikes and people with skulls walking around and shit. And there's a videotape of House inside.
Yeah, we need that.
Like, you look in its direction and it's like swirl, like that schwa laser sound. Yes. It's like, yeah, no.
Okay, we don't have that. All we have is the Nonak.
We don't have it yet.
So yes, this is what we are going to do until we have that. Yeah.
All right. Well, that could be a Patreon goal, maybe. Help fund the Forever Tomb. Mm-hmm. Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh my God, yes. I have my house mat suit on. Nonak for sure.
All right. So I'll let this one play out, guys. That means that House Season 2, Episode 13, Skin Deep, you're ultra inducted, apparently, into the extra hot Great Nonak. All right, guys, that is it. We're done. That is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We discovered there were plenty of bad no-knock-worthy television to go around, so everybody loses. Great. Next up, something really neat on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
you had me a teenage supermodel,
and Sarah D. Bunting,
Happy New Year to you in jail.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Sarah, Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Yep.
Right here on Extra Hot Great.
Well, I can't stand around here chatting all day. I'm on a cycling tour of North Cornwall. Must be off.